just make your must-have and deal-breaker list, and that will help you so much. That's the first step of gaining crystal clarity on what you want and how to avoid the toxic relationships. Beyond that, get the book, and it goes into great detail.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Jared Easley. And of course, my co-host is here today, Miss Christine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. And our guest today is someone who has a lot of confidence and who never was picked on as a child by people calling him funny things like his last name. I don't even know why I went there other than the pre-conversation, the pre-recording. We kind of...
Yeah, okay, we're done now.
Our guest is today our guest is what? Rick. Our guest was Rick Sotavir. And it's pronounced Sotavir. And so I asked him if anyone had ever messed with him about that. And then he's like, can you get that knife out of my back? And so we've started the podcast off great. Thank you, Rick. Rick, you're the author of the book, Dating Backward. It's a practical guide to dating and finding your soulmate. So you are a relationship and dating coach. You are passionate about helping people through the dating process and making the best relationship decisions possible. Rick, we really do appreciate you lowering your standards of being on
the show. Yes, welcome to the show, Rick.
Well, thanks for having me, I think.
All right, Rick, so we're going to start with a little icebreaker, and hopefully this doesn't go downhill.
too late.
All right, so
if you guys don't take it there, I will.
Fair enough. So the question is, what is the best concert that you have ever been to?
Oh, I've been to some really good concerts in the last couple of years. The last one, probably one of the most memorable ones, was George Strait in January. And then a couple of years ago, I got to see Fleetwood Mac in concert, and that was an awesome concert.
Nice.
They played for almost 2.5 hours straight. And so, while they're diametrically opposed, I guess, I love both genres of music. So,
well, I used to live in Texas, Rick, and I have to have an appreciation for George Strait, being that I lived in Texas for a period of time. So, I have only seen him once, and you're right, it was quite the experience. I don't think Christine has any George Strait in her catalog.
No, I think Choey saw Fleetwood Mac last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's who she saw, but I'm not even 100%
that's
sure if
okay,
that was
Christine.
The concert.
We will send you links. Yeah, we'll send you some YouTube links later so you can get caught.
Yeah, I was going to say, Christine, do you even know who Fleetwood Mac or George Strait are?
I have definitely heard of George Strait and Fleetwood Mac. I cannot tell you not one song that either of them sang.
That's okay.
Not offhand.
If somebody played something,
I would probably be like, oh, that's who sings that. I know who that is. It's kind of how that works.
Yeah, we stop judging on this show after Rick's intro. We're good.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. All right, let's get on track. Okay, so the key to being a good baker is what, Rick?
Finish the sentence, Rick.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Yeah. All right, give it to him again.
Okay, so we do a little thing called finish the sentence. The key to being a good baker is to blank.
Good ingredients.
Good ingredients.
You sound like Papa John.
And I don't know how far down you dug into my background, but I grew up as a baker's son. And one of the things that I do is I bake Christmas cookies and give them away each year. So this past Christmas, I baked about, 312 dozen cookies.
Now is that one of the
do that this year with COVID-19 happening? Anybody handing out cookies fall?
Rick has gloves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But Rick, is that one of those gifts where they're like, you shouldn't have, or Rick, you shouldn't have,
No, I've been doing that for the last, the better part of 20 years. And I took a break one year shortly after my divorce, and I got a lot of disappointing comments about how they were disappointed that they didn't get cookies. It was almost like, we were really looking forward to those, but that shot our Christmas all to heck.
Well, because you're the son of a baker, you obviously had practice, and so to get a Christmas cookie from Rick is a good thing. Hey, you know, maybe we can end up on that list someday. That would be pretty
right,
cool.
Right, Christmas.
I don't know. You're going to have to, what's it worth to you guys?
Yeah, it was a big maybe, Rick. Let's keep going with the finish this sentence since it's going so well. If you ever visit Kansas City, blank. If you ever visit Kansas City.
If you ever visit Kansas City, you have to try the barbecue.
Ah, so I am familiar with Kansas City barbecue. Now, what are we talking Arthur Bryant's? What are we talking here?
There are a lot of great barbecue places. There are some great mom and pop shops. There's Jack Stack's. There's Q39. There's, gosh, I'm drawing a blank right now, but there are so many really good barbecue restaurants around the metropolitan area. And again, some of them are just mom and pop stores that you would never in a million years, you'd look at it from the outside and, oh, I'm not going in there.
Okay.
But the barbecue is awesome.
I'm glad you said that because my experience at Arthur Bryant's was in a rougher neighborhood, Christine. Think of your upbringing in West Philly. It was this neighborhood where there was like bars on the window, if I recall. And I'm like, should I be here? Is this the right place? And sure enough,
yep.
Rick was right. Because when I went in, it was probably the best barbecue I'd had up to that point, maybe still. But when, you know, if I judged it from the outside looking in, I'd be like, I don't know if this is safe. I don't know if this is right. But it was safe and right. So well said, Rick.
Time for my food list, Christmas cookies and barbecue. It's going to be a long Thursday.
It's going to be that what do they call it? The COVID-19, like you gain 19 pounds or something.
19?
Like, have you ever heard of the freshman 20?
You guys are getting 19.
Like when you go to college, you get the freshman 20 or whatever they call it. It's like
COVID-19.
The COVID-19. Yeah. Never mind.
Okay. So Rick, Jared tells me you owned a financial planning practice in the past. What advice do you have regarding personal finances for single people looking to meet their significant other?
Get your finances in order. Be financially secure. Doesn't mean you have to be wealthy, but just save money. Do you know? And at my age, you know, you're about done. We're about done saving. You know, I'm in my early 60s. So if you're young, start saving and just build your portfolio, and it doesn't look like it's doing much, but just keep investing. And when you get to be my age, then you'll have a decent nest egg.
Do you encourage people to go like the Dave Ramsey route where they kind of follow the baby steps and stuff or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Get rid of your, and he's absolutely right. Get rid of your debt, build your cash reserves and then start, you know, saving for retirement and other things. So yeah, he's one of the best.
Well, as much as personal finance and helping people with finances, I'm sure meant the world to you. And that was, you know, filling that passion bucket. You didn't stay in that space. You actually transitioned over and became a dating coach, which is one of the big reasons we wanted to talk. And so I want to hear that story, if you're willing. How did you get started as a dating coach?
Well, that's, I'm glad you asked.
You're welcome. Yeah. We aim to please here, Rick.
I've been a student of self and relationship improvement for, gosh, it's like 36 or 37 years now. And it started actually, I've been in sales for over 40 years of my life. And it started with sales books, you know, how to become a better salesman, how to close the sale, how to talk to people, you know, sales strategies. And then it kind of drifted into personal self-help books. How do I become a better man? How do I become a better dad? How do I become a better husband? And so, it's just continued to grow year after year after year. And about 10 years ago, I recognized that, or maybe even 12 years ago, I started to recognize that people would just walk up to me. I could be sitting in a bar having a drink, you know, just sitting at the bar by myself, not talking to anyone. Someone would come up and sit next to me and start talking to me about their relationship. And I'd have to look around and said, how do you know that this is my passion? And, you know, it was just, and it's just that was a God thing that he made me recognize that this is a gift that he's given me. And so the last couple of years that I was a financial advisor, and don't misunderstand me, I loved the work. I loved my clients. I loved what I did, but it just wasn't fulfilling anymore. And so I was sharing this one day with a friend of mine, and she asked me, well, what is your passion? And it took me about a week or 10 days to just think through that whole process. And being that I had recently gone through my divorce and recognized all the divorce that's going on, and talking to so many people about their relationships and their problems. And it started to dawn on me that we all make so many of the same problems or same mistakes. And when we got back on the phone a couple of weeks later, I started laying out the premise for a book and, you know, trying to help people make better decisions on the front end rather of a relationship, as opposed to having to fix a broken marriage or a broken relationship. And she started throwing some good ideas out at me, and I stopped and I said, why don't you help me write this book? She stopped and said, okay. Hmm. And like 2 or 3 days later, we had a working outline and we were off to the races. And about two months into the writing of the book, I said, you know, this is what I want to do when I grow up. So, you know, there was a little bit of a process after that, but, you know, it was just literally a couple of months, and I put my practice up for sale, retired, and I've been doing this for the last seven and a half years.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a long answer to a short question.
But a great answer.
Yeah. Well, what's the biggest problem? What would you say the biggest problem is with dating today?
One of the biggest things that I see is people start dating again. It's a combination thing. They start dating too soon after they're divorced or widowed or coming out of a long-term relationship. They don't take time to heal and grieve the loss of that relationship. And then the second part is they start dating without knowing exactly what they're looking for in a relationship. I see it time and time again that people just go out, they come out of a relationship and they said, yeah, I really want to be in a relationship. I want to go out and start dating again. And they just kind of fall into a relationship without thinking about it. And it goes back to my financial planning days. People would spend more time planning their annual vacation than they would on retirement. The same thing is true with their relationships. They spend more time on planning a vacation than they do thinking about the ideal person they want to spend the rest of their life with. And so what I try to do is, and we do it in the book, is we try to take them back to the very basics, the very beginning, and help them gain clarity about what they're looking for. Create your must-have list, your deal-breaker list. Understand what you bring to the table. And the question I ask everyone is, are you the person you'd love to date? And if your answer is anything but yes, then you need to start looking and seeing what you need to fix in your life to be that ideal person, to be that ideal mate for someone else. So, you know,
what's an example of something that would typically be that's probably not one I can answer yes to right this moment. I'm sure you've seen those. What's an example of that?
Say that again. I wasn't quite clear.
So if you ask that question and someone's really honest with themselves, because not everybody likes to do that. Not everybody likes to look at themselves. And,
nobody likes to do that.
But if they, let's pretend they do, and they, you know, they're in a safe place like this podcast. And we're in a safe space. And they say, okay, this is a particular area that I probably am not where I'd like to be. What's an example of that area?
It could be any number of things. It could be they're shy. It could be they're overweight, or they have body image issues. It could be that they have anger issues, and hopefully they would, if you're honest, you're going to recognize that and be able to address those things. It could be emotional issues, and those emotional issues could go all the way back to childhood. In which case, there may be some things that you need to work on with a counselor or a therapist. And, you know, so those are, you know, some of the handful of things that might come out when you think about that question in a thoughtful, introspective way.
Well, it's interesting you said you asked the question. You said to ask the question, are you the person you want to date? Because a lot of people think you should compliment, supplement each other, or that opposites attract. So by you saying, are you the person you want to date? Like which one is it? Or how can it be both?
Well, and yes, opposites do attract, but studies show that when you get into a relationship with somebody that's opposite of you, those statistically only last about 5 years, you know, plus or minus a little bit. Because what happens is you find somebody that has opposite characteristics in you in the beginning of the relationship. It's, oh, look at what she does. It's so different, so unique. And it's just, oh, isn't he cute? Oh, isn't she sweet? And it's those little things in the beginning that you find so unique, so intriguing, so inviting, that, you know, a couple of years down the road is like, oh my God, you're driving me crazy. Can you stop doing that? And, you know,
I can't relate. I don't get it.
Oh, boy.
Which means I'm that guy, right?
So what I try to do is I try to, and I mean, don't misunderstand me. There are exceptions to every rule.
Right.
But as a general rule, I try to guide my clients to find somebody similar to them, you know, so that you have a lot in common. You have common morals and values. You have common likes and dislikes. Because when you start having a lot of different differences in that relationship, what you're doing is you're putting up roadblocks to a great relationship. And while roadblocks can be overcome, or you know, you can go around them in some way, shape, or form, it's always easier to have a relationship where you have a lot in common. You can share things. You can, and we all need our alone time, or our, you know, our Jared time and our Christine time. And you know, but as a whole, you should be coming back together at the end of each day and be able to enjoy each other's company, and you know, to go off and do vacations separately, or to, you know, take long weekends or weekend trips apart. I don't see that as productive. I mean, you can do it occasionally, but you should be working at coming together as opposed to spending time apart.
So this is we've kind of tied into this, but let's go there. What are some of the key characteristics of great relationships?
Oh, that's a good one. There are what I call the four cornerstones of great relationships. And it starts with building on this foundation. You need to develop an intellectual connection, a spiritual connection, an emotional connection, and a physical connection. And we all think of the physical connection as hopping into bed, but it's also the physical appearance. You need to be attracted to your mate. And the intellectual connection is being able to talk, being able to share ideas, having common morals and values, like I'd mentioned a little bit ago. And when you have a great intellectual connection, you can talk about anything and everything. And it could be everything from, you know, simple, superficial things like the weather to very deep, deep philosophical conversations. And those types of conversations are rare because we tend not to open ourselves up to be vulnerable. And so, you know, it's important to develop that connection, a spiritual connection. I truly believe, and again, there's exceptions to every rule, but I truly believe that you need to be on the same page spiritually. Doesn't mean you need to be in the same place in your journey when whatever you believe. You know, if you're a Christian, be with a Christian. If you're a Muslim, be with a Muslim. If you're Jewish, be with a Jew. If you're atheist, be with an atheist. Because one of the biggest things that I see, and it's more common with women, that women tend to be a little more spiritual or religious than guys, and they like to go to church. And I say that from so many of the people that I work with, that are so many of the women that I work with, one of their biggest complaints is that their boyfriend or their husband won't go to church with them. So, you know, that's why it's so important to be on the same page spiritually. Again, you don't have to be in the same place in your journey. Just be moving in the same direction. Then the emotional connection, you know, and we tend to think of love. We all want to be in love. And it goes so much deeper than that. the emotional connection is really when you touch someone very deeply emotionally, or you connect with them, and it's really a difficult feeling or expression to try to describe, because it really does transcend words. And your partner is going to have that same connection with you. They're going to move you very deeply, just as you're going to move them very deeply emotionally. And it doesn't mean they're going to break you down into tears. It just means they touch you on an emotional level that, you know, they're the first person that you want to see in the morning. They're the last person that you want to say goodnight to. They're the first person that you want to come home to and share your day with. It just becomes a very deep, deep, deep emotional connection.
That's deep. Okay. All right. So
I just overwhelmed you guys. It was just you're just absorbing all this and going, oh crap, he just stopped talking. Now what do I say?
I went to church with her. I mean, I don't know what
to say. I was like, I need to find some Jesus. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, when is the last time I went to church? I'm like, oh man, you calling me out?
Well, and Christine, in fairness, you do. But let's keep going.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
So, Rick, where do you look for a good man or a good woman to date nowadays?
Well, it's a lot of it is still the same traditional places. But then, you know, you've got work, you've got church, you've got social life, you've got, there's so many opportunities to meet people. And then you have the online component that we didn't have 20 years ago. You know, so all of this has changed. You know, there's the smartphone has created a bit of a revolution in communication with people. It can also be considered the bane of our existence because it's become so, I think technically or statistically, most people look at their phones like 2,500 times a day. You know, so it's really, you know, what did we do before we had these things? I remember growing up when I had to sit in the kitchen on a chair talking to somebody on the phone attached to a cord, and everybody heard your conversation. There was no privacy. But I digress. And you had to call the girl on by Wednesday.
The landline phone.
A landline phone, yeah. You don't see many of those anymore. But you had to call the girl by Wednesday for a date on Saturday. Now it's you text them, hey, there's a group of us going over to so-and-so's or going to such and such a place. Meet us there in 2 hours. You know, dating has changed so dramatically. But then there's online dating, and they say that 30% of relationships start online. Well, that's a pretty significant number, and there's a lot of people that say, nope, online dating's not for me. And what I tend to tell those people is, well, that's like hiring a carpenter and telling him to leave 30% of his tools in the truck. You know, it's, you start handicapping yourself. And in online, I look at online dating as a tool to help you meet people that you just wouldn't normally come across in your daily walk through life. You know, I've been on and off dating sites for 10 years now, and I have met some great women that will be lifelong friends. You know, and we weren't a match, but, you know, I've met some really interesting and fun people. And so, you know, when you start looking at all the options, I mean, there are meetup groups. I don't know if you guys are familiar with meetup groups, but it's a kind of, I think it's actually an international organization, and every town, every city has their own meetup groups. And I think in Kansas City, there's something like 1,500 different meetup groups, and you can, you know, it can be on any interest. It can be music, it can be dating, it can be drumming, it can be hiking, biking, you know, any number of things, whatever your interest is. So there's
a meetup group.
It's called meetup.com. And if you just put in meetup.com,
I don't know.
No, I've been to meetups, not for dating purposes, but I've been to meetups for like podcasting, for example. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Have you been to one for those speed datings, Rick?
Well, I've done speed networking, which I think, I totally agree with Rick. I think meetups is a great place to meet people. I've never personally gone for dating because I'm married, but I could see how that would make sense. So,
well, yeah, and from a single perspective, and you don't need to join to date. You join because you have an interest in something.
Right.
It could be photography, could be whatever. You know, I have a group in Kansas City, and we're a little over 5,000 members, and while that sounds like a huge number, most of them are inactive. You know, there's probably 200 or 250 that are actually regularly active. But still, you get out and my group, we meet once a month, or at least our main event we hold on a monthly basis. And we'll get anywhere from 40 to 100 people come in, and we'll have drinks and hors d'oeuvres, or some people will get dinner, whatever it is. And it's just a time and a place to socialize, because in our lives today, we get into such a rut. We get up, we go to work, we come home, we plop ourselves down and watch the news, we watch whatever's on TV that night, go to bed and start all over in the morning. And what I try to do is try to get people out of their rut a little bit. And if, you know, it's only one night a month, so you come out, you meet a couple of new friends, and the whole idea is that you want to develop a circle of single friends. Because when we get divorced or when we're widowed, all of our friends are typically married, and that's okay for a while, but after a while, it's no fun being the third wheel.
Right.
So, right. So the idea is to get out and socialize, but you can still meet great people at church. You can still meet great people through work. And I don't necessarily mean coworkers, but you know, could be customers, could be vendors, you know, that you meet through work. So there's, you know, I've had people come up to me and ask, well, Rick, what should I do? Well, what do you like to do? You know, what are your hobbies? What are your likes? What are your interests? And, you know, there's invariably clubs or groups that you can do things. If you want to go find ladies, if you're looking to go find a good guy, go hang out at the golf course. Go to the,
yeah.
Listen, guys spend a lot of time at the golf course. Where do you want to go to find a guy? Now,
I used to run a place, like I used to live on a golf course, and one of my friends was supposed to hook me up with some golf clubs. I never got those damn golf clubs. They actually ended up selling them. I was like, dude, you're supposed to give me the golf clubs because I was going to go golfing.
But Christine, he's right, though, because golf is an expensive sport. So if a guy's playing golf,
oh my God, like everybody,
there is a chance he might be financially savvy.
I was just like, I need some golf clubs. I got some there. I was like, well, get them, dig them out of storage and hook it up.
I don't know, Christine. I don't think you're going to play golf. I think you should go to a meetup. Should go to a meetup for Tiger King people.
Like, yeah, that's exactly where I'm going to be.
I think you're going to have success.
Probably. There's probably even a dating site for Tiger King.
That's right.
Yes.
They have the,
I don't think I'm his type.
Farmersonly.com.
Oh, man. Yeah. Been there, done that.
Have you?
Wrote the book. Yes. Okay, we've never farmers. That's me.
Well, we've never talked about that. So I want to know if you have.
Been on Farmers.
All right. But
Now let's go back. So let's go back to relationships, Rick. How do you recognize toxic relationships before you get in too deep, you're too involved?
Well, and this is basically a two-step process. Number one, you have to understand what you want in the relationship and what your deal breakers are. So I always start with having my clients make their must-have list. And this is a list of non-negotiable characteristics that they want in the relationship. And I want to clarify this, that if it's something that would be nice to have, that goes on a separate list. The non-negotiable, or the must-haves are non-negotiable. If you have a list of 20 items, and I just use that number as a random number. I've got friends that have 5 things on their must-have, and I've got people, I've had clients with as many as 60. Jeez. So it's...
They're easy to please.
Well, you know, they might be, they might not be. It just depends on what those must-haves are.
And know what they're
and here's the importance of this to me, is that if you meet somebody and they have 19 out of your 20, what do you do? You know, and my first recommendation, the first word that should be coming out of your mouth is next. And the reason being is that if these are non-negotiable characteristics that you absolutely want in your next relationship, if you accept 19 of the 20, you're settling for less than your extraordinary. And
interesting.
Then we move on to the deal breakers. And that deal breaker list should be relatively short. Because if you have a really long deal breaker list, you need to really work on flipping some of those over to the must-have list and writing them in a positive format. And I'll give you an example. If you don't want to date smokers, if you were to say, I won't date smokers, what's the picture that comes to your mind?
They're not smoking?
Well, if you're not dating someone who's smoking, you're seeing somebody with a cigarette, like...
Exactly. That's the first thought that comes to mind is you see somebody, you're visioning somebody with a cigarette.
Smoke break at work or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, well, now people smoke a lot of things besides cigarettes. So that's
why true, Rick.
So, well, and I'll tell you a quick story about that because
I don't know the state laws of Kansas, so let's let's just go with the current analogy.
Let me finish this story. So what you do is if you don't want to date a smoker, you flip that around to say something like must be smoke free. And I'd been dating a woman for about a week, and we started going through our list, and I got to the bottom of mine, and the last one was must be smoke free. She looked at me and said, what kind of smoke? And we both instantly knew right there that it wasn't going to work for us. And it was really sad because she's a great woman. She's still a great friend of mine. But we recognized right then and there we weren't a good match. So now to go back to your question about the red flags, when you have your must-have and deal-breaker list, you can step back from the infatuation and raging hormones of a new relationship and look at your list. Does he have this, 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 and this? Or does she have everything that I'm looking for that's on my list? And or are any of the deal breakers showing up? And if they are, if you're starting to see red flags at that point, that's the time to walk away. And I contend that if you have your deal breaker and your must-have list written out, you can date somebody for 30 days or less and start figuring out whether they're worth pursuing further. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to recognize or that they're going to display every characteristic of their personality. You know, there may be some ugliness buried a little deeper that you have to get to know. But the minute you start to see red flags, the minute you start to see somebody that starts to control you or is verbally abusive or physically abusive, you want to run in the other direction. You know, ladies and some guys, you know, it happens to men too. The minute they lay a hand on you violently, you need to run and there should be no turning back. So it's so many of these things can be recognized very quickly. So
a lot of people ignore that stuff though. That's what I've found like through my work. I can see like they'll complain about it initially and then the cops get involved and they're like, oh no, I don't want the cops involved. But
yeah. And that's,
well, it's because they settled.
That's right. And that's why it's so important to be able to look at your must-have list and your deal-breaker list. So many people get into relationships for the wrong reasons, because they're lonely, because they want companionship. They're afraid of being alone, and they settle. You know, and the rationale that they use is, well, they might not find anyone better, or he treats me well enough. Or, you know, if it's really insidious, if they're with somebody that has narcissistic tendencies, they may convince you that nobody else will want you. You're not good enough. Mm. And they're being gracious or they're being sympathetic and they're taking care of you out of the goodness of their heart.
Yeah.
So whenever you try to get in, whenever you start spotting those types of things, you need to run in the opposite direction. And there's some great books out there, and a lot of it is because, number one, we're not emotionally healthy when we get into those types of relationships. We've got to get to a point, and I say we all have to get to the, except Jared, you're married, so this doesn't.
I'm immune.
Except Jared, he's got shit together. We have the other everybody else.
We made it for 11 years, so my wife has been settling for a long time. I'm really proud.
You dated up, she dated down.
Yeah,
so.
I will blame that all.
No, what you want to do is you want to get emotionally healthy. You want to be out of your last relationship long enough that you get to a point where you're comfortable with your own company. Doesn't mean you don't get lonely, but you want to be able to tolerate or to weather the loneliness and be happy with your own company.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, you don't have to be, you know, it doesn't mean you don't want somebody in your life. It's just, it's not a necessity. It's not a need. And whenever you date from a needy perspective or an unhealthy emotional perspective, you're dating from a position of weakness. And that's more times than not when you're going to get into trouble, when you're going to get into a bad relationship. So it's so critically important to heal after your last relationship and grieve that relationship. And then you can move on in a healthy format. Doesn't mean you can't date along the way. Just don't get serious about it. You know, just recognize that you're not ready. You're not emotionally ready. And one of the biggest problems I see is with widows. Their friends, you know, they've been widowed for a year, and I've seen this through both my financial planning career and my relationship and dating coaching career, that we have well-intentioned friends. They want us to get back into relationship. And, you know, if you spent a year alone, you're fine. Time to move on. Well, that's not true. It takes on average of about 5 years for a widow to really process and move forward. The first year, they're just in a fog. You know, they're just trying to get their legs under them. They're trying to figure out what their spouse, you know, was doing and how they handled the bills and, you know, dealing with having to deal with home repairs and car repairs. And, you know, typically when the other spouse was taking care of so much of that, or taking care of the house, or taking care of the kids, or, you know, there's such a transition that the first year is just a blur. It's a fog. And then, you know, gradually they start figuring out. And then, especially for widows, you got to start figuring out, well, we had these plans for a lifetime. You know, this is what we were planning on doing down the road. Now those plans are out the window. Hmm. You know, that partner's not there anymore. So then you got to start reevaluating those things. So, gosh, how about that for a downer?
Well, thanks, Rick. We're going to go to the bar now to meet our significant other.
I'm already there. What are you talking about?